Hi there, this is Robert Fleming, one of the partners in the Tucson, Arizona elder law firm of Fleming & Curdy PLC. You're listening to Elder Law Issues with me and my other partner, Elizabeth Noble Rawlings Freeman. I guess, Elizabeth, you're not really my other partner. You are my partner.
Well, I am your partner, Robert, and you and I both have two wonderful partners.
That's right.
That also include Rhonda Fleming and Douglas Freeman. So shout out to Rhonda and Doug.
I guess you are my other partner then. And then we're at our feet, we have our third partners, Duncan and Rosalind. So if listeners don't know who they are, go check the website. You can meet Duncan and Rosalind. Right now, they're pretty beat.
Yeah, they're pretty sacked out, Robert. It's a Sunday here, and we're talking elder law issues, right?
We are. And I thought we could talk today about how people go about actually signing their estate planning documents in our office. I'm surprised at how often people really misapprehend how this process works. We get calls all the time where someone says, I need to sign a power of attorney. Can I come in Thursday and sign? Well, no, we need to talk about who you want as your agent. We need to kind of go through a bunch of options. We need to ask whether you also need a healthcare power of attorney and is your will up to date. And so we're going to have a meeting with you first. And no, we don't have these forms stacked in a file cabinet in the back where we just fill them in and have you sign. We're going to need to do drafts for you to look out. But today, Elizabeth, I thought I'd talk about what happens after all of that process has occurred and the drafts are ready and have been finalized. And someone comes back to the office to sign. Maybe that's the first question. Do they have to come back to the office to sign?
Well, Robert, the answer is 99.9% of the time, yes. The little 1% that don't come back to our office and sign, we're actually coordinating with an attorney. If the person is, let's just say, elsewhere in Arizona, we might be coordinating with another attorney to have our client sign in another attorney's office if it's more convenient. So there's every once in a while we will have people from around Arizona outside of the Tucson area come in and meet with us about estate planning. And sometimes those people live 5 or 6 hours away from Tucson. And in those cases, we really try and make sure that they can sign in the office of an attorney who might be located a little bit more close to them than we are.
One of the things that people are very surprised by is why they can't sign these estate planning documents electronically. They can buy their groceries electronically. They can buy and sell a house electronically. They can get a mortgage. They can buy mutual funds. They can do everything electronically. Why can't they sign wills and powers of attorney and maybe their trusts electronically?
Well, Robert, this gets into a really way more complicated discussion than I think we're going to focus on today. But when we think about signing estate planning documents electronically, the answer is you can have an electronic will, and Arizona is one of a few states that permits that. You can have notaries sign things electronically as well in Arizona. These are more of a headache, actually, than a practicality, because Arizona is not a state where all these options have been around for long, Robert. And when we consider things like witnesses and we consider the requirements of having a valid will, things get quite complicated when people want to start signing electronically. And Robert, rather than taking a risk that somebody will have not been able to validly execute a document, I try and nudge them and explain we still need to have wet ink on paper.
We've had in Arizona, what you alluded to, Elizabeth, we've had an electronic will option for about 4 years now. And in that time, how many have you been involved with or seen other people do?
Zero.
And my number is, coincidentally, zero. Everybody I know, all of the people in the industry that I know, have zero as well. The problem is that the electronic signature idea, which was brand new, we were the second or third state to even adopt something, depending on how you count it. It just turned out not to be ready for prime time. Some other states have come up with systems that work a little better, but not very many. So electronic signing of estate planning documents is, for the moment, just a non-issue.
And Robert, I think when we talk about somebody like the testator, so me signing my own will electronically, that's a very different conversation than having a notary who is a virtual notary actually notarize my document. So people who say, well, wait, isn't something, can I have a virtual notary? Can I have this done electronically, something, whether I'm in Arizona or elsewhere, notarized? Yeah, there are a whole separate slew of rules around that. And actually, those rules and the rules around electronic wills, I don't think they jive great together.
They don't. And related to that is the problem of witnesses. So you don't have to have witnesses on your powers of attorney, but you do have to have witnesses on your will. And people kind of expect to see witnesses on the power of attorney. You don't have to have witnesses on your trust. But you kind of expect, people kind of expect to see witnesses on your trust as well. So why would we do things without witnesses when we're going to have them for the will anyway? And that means that in order to do a remote notary arrangement, we have to have two witnesses and a remote notary and you all available together. At that point, it's just as easy to have an in-person notary as well.
Right. And for people listening today, we're talking about Arizona law. We're talking about Arizona documents. I think there are a lot of questions around signing appointments, and I want to not focus on what kind of document somebody may sign when we think about estate planning signings. I want to talk about the signing generally, Robert, and let most people know, please expect to spend more than 10 minutes at the signing appointment. We have sometimes people who buzz in and say, listen, can't I sign? This will just take 10 minutes, right? And my answer to that is no, it's going to take a little bit longer. And depending on what you need to sign, we can probably get you in and out in somewhere between 40 and 60 minutes. But we have to go through a procedure with each document that you sign, not only identifying the document. We'll probably ask you a couple of questions just to make sure you don't have any more questions before you sign the documents. But we have people all the time who say, well, I can bring my own witnesses, and can't I just take my document to the bank for a notary? And so when we tell them, no, it's really not a best practice, we want you in our office, it's because we want to meet with you so that if there's ever a question about the signing appointment, we're actually able to say, yep, client so-and-so came into our office to sign, and these are our systems and procedures for signings. Having you just take the document we prepared over to the bank and use your friends or random witnesses is not really the format that brings us the most peace of mind.
And we want to make sure that this set of documents that you do is valid. The only way we're completely comfortable with that is if we oversee it. In an emergency, if you said, I have two witnesses and I'm going to the bank, could we meet you at the bank or be on the phone walking you through it? Yeah, probably. But the risk of having an error introduced goes up anytime we deviate from kind of the normal way we do it. A related question, Elizabeth, can a husband and wife or a married couple, I guess they don't have to be husband and wife, could they sign separately? Could one of them come into the office today and the next one, the other one, a week later?
Absolutely, Robert. I mean, we can coordinate around people's schedules. I think what I try and encourage people to consider when we think about a signing appointment, we think about the witnesses and who's present, is also to think about whether or not there's somebody else that your estate plan relates to, meaning if you are married, if that person is also doing estate planning, if we represent both of you jointly, having a joint signing probably makes sense and is just efficient for everybody to do all together. But sometimes people come in to us with questions about whether or not a child who's a remainder beneficiary might attend the signing appointment. And in those cases, we try and be as polite as possible, but encourage that remainder beneficiary to sit in the lobby because we don't want to have any chance down the road that somebody might say that you were under undue influence when you were signing.
There's an expression that we learned in law school that might help people understand why we are so persnickety about signings. And that is that most legal principles look to the best evidence. Well, by necessity, your will is the worst evidence of your wishes because you're not there to explain what you meant or to say what happened. And so we want to make sure that that we get past the argument that the alleged exploiter child was in the room during the process or that somebody really didn't watch you sign or that the notary didn't see all three people sign. And the best way to make sure all those things are taken care of is to do it in our office.
And Robert, I think that we oftentimes will see that somebody does need help with transportation to our office, and that person might ask a daughter or a neighbor or somebody close to them to drive them. Those are often the people that they say, well, can't so-and-so be a witness? It would make me feel good if my daughter was a witness. No. For all the reasons that we just discussed, the answer is no. And one of them is also actually a very technical legal answer in Arizona. We don't want to have your agent be the witness.
Right. There is a particular legal problem with having your agent be a witness on a financial power of attorney. And so that's another thing that we want to make sure we avoid. You probably didn't know. You, client, didn't know that that was a problem. If we told you get two witnesses, you're pretty likely to get the agent to be the witness. A married couple are likely to be each other's witnesses, and they are the agents pretty typically. So we're trying to get over all those problems by bringing you to the office. Isn't this just really a long-winded way of saying it's a billing opportunity for us, Elizabeth?
No, Robert, I would tell you that most often our legal assistants are the ones who are going ahead and coordinating and managing the signing appointments. So it is not uncommon for you or me to be doing other things around the office during a signing. The other thing is that in some cases, Robert, we have set a cap on our fees or a flat fee. And so what we want to do is we want to get things right for you.
That's why we're quite so difficult to deal with on the signing on your estate planning documents. There's a good legal reason behind it. So please bear with us and just plan on coming in for that something less than an hour appointment while we go through all of the you'll be impressed by the choreography of the paper. It moves in very strange circles around the room that only somebody who's done a few signings can trace carefully. Please come see us for the signing. Please come see us for your estate planning. That's what we do. If you live in Arizona, we'd love to talk with you about all of this. I've been chatting with my partner, Elizabeth Noble Rawlings Freeman. My name's Robert Fleming. We are the partners in the Tucson, Arizona elder law firm of Fleming & Curdy PLC, and this is Elder Law Issues. We will, I hope, hear from you. No, you will hear from us next week as well. Thanks.